Now, as insurgent tactics evolve, so do American moves. NPR's Vicky O'Hara reports on the increasing use of U.S. air power.
American air power has changed dramatically since the first Gulf War in 1991. General John Jumper, who retired as Air Force Chief of Staff last summer, remembers that communications and coordination between the different military services were so poor as, in his words, to be almost criminal.
We had to fly the air tasking order from the shore out to the carrier-based aircraft every single day. Computer sheets, stacks of computer sheets that made up the air tasking order, because we didn't have the communications to transmit it from the shore to the sea.
Jumper says the services spent the next 15 years trying to improve integration. The results are on display in Iraq. Unmanned aerial vehicles such as the Predator perform daily reconnaissance and surveillance. The intelligence they gather is relayed instantly to U.S. ground forces, also to Navy, Marine, and Air Force fighter pilots. General Jumper says air assets give the military unique capabilities in fighting Iraq's insurgency.
You will find a Predator UAV actually firing a Hellfire missile into a window of a building to take out a sniper that they aren't able to get any other way.
Air Force Colonel Michael Cosby is staff director at the Combined Air Headquarters in Qatar, which coordinates U.S. air campaigns in that region. He notes that traditionally, air power has been used against clearly defined masses of troops. Iraq, Cosby says, is different.
As we evolved in Operation Iraqi Freedom, obviously, the insurgents moved from the open desert into the population centers.
And U.S. forces increasingly have gone after them with close air support. Cosby says that airstrikes against the insurgents numbered 20 or 30 a month last summer and escalated to 60 a month in the fall in the run-up to Iraqi elections. But using air power in populated areas is risky. This week, U.S. fighter jets struck a building in Beji, a town north of Baghdad. U.S. Central Command says that three suspected suicide bombers were believed to be inside, but Iraqi officials say the airstrike killed an Iraqi family of 12. A Washington Post correspondent on the scene wrote that the bodies of three women and three boys were removed from the house. The U.S. military says it's investigating what happened, but Colonel Cosby emphasizes the military takes every possible precaution to avoid harming innocent civilians.
In fact, on many occasions, they elect not to engage with particular types of weapons and choose other options to fight the insurgents.
Sunni Arab officials complain bitterly about civilian casualties caused by U.S. airstrikes. Professor Robert Pape of the University of Chicago previously taught air strategy to the U.S. Air Force, and he warns that airstrikes in Iraq create political fallout.
If we use air power in urban areas in the Sunni area to extend search and destroy missions deeper into the Sunni triangle, then this will undoubtedly be viewed as a punishment campaign by the Sunni population and could actually increase the number of guerrillas in order to lash back at what will be viewed as excessive use of military force.
U.S. officials acknowledge the risks but say that until an Iraqi air force is reconstituted, U.S. aircraft will stay on the job. Colonel Cosby says that as U.S. ground troops stand down, U.S. air power will become even more important, supporting Iraqi security forces. Cosby says that currently American controllers call in any airstrikes by U.S. forces, but he acknowledges that could change over time.
We are planning in the future to train Iraqis in order to be able to have assets available to them in an emergency.
But before Iraqi controllers would be allowed to call in U.S. fighter jets, Cosby says, the U.S. military has to figure out how to avoid the possibility that Iraqis would call in American pilots to settle their old ethnic scores. Vicky O'Hara, NPR News, Washington.